Hello and welcome to the Property Roundup here on iProperty Radio with myself, Carol Tallon, the show where we chat to industry experts to get a view on what's happening on the ground and to learn about new trends emerging. This show is sponsored by daft.ie, Ireland's most visited property website. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by returning guest, Alicia Green, FlexSpace consultant with Knight Frank. Alicia, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining me again today.
Thank you so much for having us, Carol. Delighted to be back.
You work in one of the most interesting spaces in commercial real estate right now, not just in offices, but particularly in flex space. So before we launch into that, just for anybody who might not be familiar, you might just describe what it is that you do within Knight Frank.
Yeah, so obviously I look after the Knight Frank Flexible Office Solutions. So it sits within our agency. And basically what we do is we sit underneath tenant rep. So clients come to us directly with their requirement. So they could say, you know, we deal with clients that are looking for anywhere from one desk to 100 desks to a HQ space. So very much it's a hands-on approach, tailored solution, consultancy basis. So we work with them from day one right up until we're closing the contract with them to secure the space that they want. Generally, we're seeing contracts, you know, the general standard at the moment is kind of averaging out at around 22 months. But definitely, you know, we are seeing that the trends in the sector are going beyond that. Whereas previously, I would say that kind of the trend would have been 12 months as the standard. So yeah, we're here to basically, I suppose, be the one-stop shop for them to find everything and give them a really great property journey.
I think you're really well positioned. I know we spoke about this during our previous interview, but I think it's a really smart move. And at the time by Knight Frank, you're coming in and providing a space in. Actually, in terms of accessing office space, I think we probably need to stop calling the office market just the office market, because actually there's so many different segments now, and particularly when you're looking at the flexible space, it's almost like a different sector altogether, and that can be difficult to navigate for new occupiers coming in. Now, I know you come from the startup world, so you have a natural advantage here, but talk to us a little about some of the clients that you're working with.
Yeah, so I think, you know, as you said there, I think the expectations have massively changed, you know, even from, you know, I'll be here 2 years in August, even the sentiment around it, the type of, you know, clients that are looking to flex, whether it's a stay versus go option, whether it's people coming out of a traditional lease, it's not just, you know, the startup SMB, which are always great clients to have. You know, they're very innovative, they're very, you know, keen to move and things like that. But I suppose as well, the caliber of clients has definitely changed a lot more. You know, I think there's people that possibly, you know, that if you ask somebody what is the, you know, the persona of a flex office, you know, occupier, what would they say if you looked to, you know, other sides of the market or traditional office agency that necessarily aren't specializing in this? But I think definitely we're seeing a lot more refined clients, you know, especially over the last, you know, 12 months, definitely seen a lot more in terms of, you know, aircraft leasing companies that are starting from the ground up. You know, small VCs. I was out with a client the other day. They are wealth managers. I've had one or two accountants. And then I've also had a client who was a quantity surveyor as well. So he's setting up his own, and geospatial engineers as well. So I've worked with them. So it's definitely changed a lot more. The startup side definitely still come to me. Yeah. You know, the likes of people that say maybe have been let go from the likes of a big tech company and have, you know, a nice redundancy and always wanted to set up their own sort of venture, and definitely starting to do that, you know, in terms of building a SaaS company. AI as well is huge at the moment. So those sort of, you know, new companies that we're seeing coming to the market, and they seem to be, that seems to be the brand new, really hot kind of topic of startups to be coming out of Ireland.
It's really interesting, because even in the 6 or 8 months since we've spoken previously, back then it was almost all tech startups. And I know just in recent weeks, you know, we're hearing some of the stats around startup funding, and there was a quarter with zero finance raised by a fintech, and it's the first time that that's happened in Ireland, and it's the first time it's happened since 2012. So there has definitely been a shift, and I think that that was maybe foreseeable. We were starting to see that through a lot of M&A activity over the last 2 years across startups, not just for fintech. We see it in PropTech and in other sectors. But it's interesting to see that translate on the ground for you in terms of who's coming to your door looking for space. So it's interesting to know that we're going back to the accountants and the QSs, and it's almost like the more things change, the more they stay the same as well, that we still have that core business actually that is always going to exist to serve the
Exactly.
marketplace. So tell me about the offerings available in the Dublin market right now.
Yeah, so I know that we spoke a couple of months ago, so we would have seen that obviously, the stock back then versus now. We would have spoken previously on the likes of Sombrook delivering Ella House. It's been an amazing addition to the market. The houses have sold super well, so Kevin Stanley and his team have really brought something. I would say that was probably needed in the market that people maybe necessarily didn't know that they always wanted. And I think definitely as well, it's got, it's like any business in the world, wherever you come from, you look to the competition and you look to see, who the new entrants are, what unique offering is being added. And I think as well, it's only ever a good thing when we see more providers coming in because, our clients get to see what can a wider range. We spoke before as well, London is probably the closest market to us in terms of not only like location, but I would say for the good firms that are here, multinational firms, but I suppose with them that they have 10 times what we have here. So to see, I suppose, the sector growing and to see how successful that has been as well really gives, I suppose, a vote of confidence to other people that potentially, maybe looking, on the asset manager side, other landlords that maybe potentially had buildings and would have never considered it before to really go, this is a very, I would suppose, it's a permanent, facet now to the industry. It's not just, a small little part. We're seeing definitely, other people that have gone into these spaces and, are very, very eager to grow within them as well. It's definitely showing that the market is maturing. There is value in it, and I think it's offering something different that maybe can't be seen and can't be replicated in other property solutions, I suppose.
It's interesting. Just in the last number of weeks, at the MIPIM conference, the office market was the single hot topic, and there was kind of three real strands to that. And one was certainly around trying to, I suppose, understand the robustness of the pipelines that we see ahead of us in terms of trends. And that's really what you're looking at. You're not just taking the economic trends there, you're kind of taking in a lot of the psychology, how people are choosing to live and use their space as well. So really, in terms of the amenities, blurring that line, so for example, I was speaking to Susie Nolan of Aviva recently for an interview, and she spoke about an office fit out they were doing in Blackrock, and she said, the top floor had fabulous views out over Dublin Bay. And traditionally, that would have been the executive floor. And when they started, they just assumed that would be the executive floor. However, in the period of time from when they took on the project to when they were actually designing and coming to fit out, they realized that actually in the office is now competing with people's homes or their, maybe their closest co-working space. And so essentially they turned what would have previously been the executive floor into the staff floor. So that's the area, because we know that people need the best. They need an incentive almost come to the office. But that was a trend, not just that she spoke about in the context of Aviva's holdings, but it was something that was very much echoed at MIPIM. So this is happening internationally, where it's almost gone beyond the conversation of just amenities. It's like, what more can we bring? What more can we do? So you've got, the elements of how the office can attract people, and really understanding what the future of work and the future of how we use offices looks like. The second was around retrofit, because obviously the sustainability and building performance of the current stock and how that might look. But the third element of the conversation around offices was absolutely about flex space, what that means, what it's going to do, what that looks like, how do we have to reimagine it? And I think you're one of the few people in the Irish industry who's really talking about this. So tell me, what are your thoughts on this, or what are you learning from the people you're speaking to, both on the building owner side and on the potential occupiers?
Yeah, I think it's, they have to work together. I think both sides are interested in one another, from the asset managers, landlord side, and the providers that want to bring it to the market. Obviously, they have to meet in the middle. So who are those sort of, I suppose, collaborators to bring them together? So it's nearly, are the people like ourselves, in the big houses and the agencies, are we nearly the catalysts for that sort of reaction? We bring them together. We kind of lead them along the way, but it's a conversation between the two of them, and you understand because it has to work. At the end of the day, it's a business arrangement, and it has to be, beneficial as much as it can. I love that, mutually beneficial. We all want that in business, whether or not
Yes.
that's always achieved, but it needs to be, a partnership is how you need to look at it. So I suppose, both sides are trying to understand the other. Both sides really understand their margins, the values, what the payback periods can be, in terms of if, like what Susie said on that, well, when you're retrofitting a building design, how does that all sit in together? So I suppose the ones that are really doing well, possibly are building on those relationships now. It's not something that, just comes together overnight. There has to be, case studies. I would always be a huge advocate, coming from the provider side, that it really helps you understand then what the clients want, because you have to basically understand, what this side of the room is talking about, this side of the room, but also the client as well. It is a trilogy. So for them, I would say the biggest thing is that getting both sides to understand how the other works. You'd nearly need to kind of do a day in the life, so that both sides can really see it and can understand it. The figures will speak for themselves, which is always, that's how decisions are made, in the market. But I think definitely there's a lot more interest. There's a lot more in terms of to understand how they work, what the buildings look like, what the desk rates are, how could certain, if somebody say has a building, they want me to go and look at it, how would this work for flex? Would it not? What needs to be spent? What kind of fit out are you seeing? What are the biggest size requirements out there? So there's a lot more market data as well, that I suppose from the landlord side, that they want to analyze, to kind of, I suppose, set those ideas in motion, whether or not it's delivered within the portfolio, or it's definitely a conversation that, we're committing to diversifying, because we do know that the market is growing, globally. Some people will say that by 2025, 26, 2030, it could account in any region from anywhere from 15 to 30%, depending on the market that you're in. So it's definitely, if you're getting into it now, it's a very good time. You don't want to get to, 7, 8, 9 years down the line and think we really should have capitalized on this, whether it's, 3,000 square foot here, or if it's 20, 30,000 square foot in a large commitment. You can see as well, I know we spoke about this previously, the likes of WeWork going into Central Plaza. It's a huge building, it's a historical building. That's going to be coming to the market, in the summer. That is a huge commitment, and Hines have been behind that the whole time. So I think that opening and the performance of that will be huge as well. And I think, it'll also give other international operators, really put Dublin on the map, I suppose, when maybe, they kind of had a bit of knowledge on it before, but it wasn't, a target date compared to other regions like Madrid or Barcelona. I know there's a lot of stuff going on in Paris at the moment. Some bits here and there in Portugal and Lisbon as well, because of the startup scene and the VC funding that's out there. So I think it would really put us as a go-to destination in Europe.
Ireland actually has work to do in order to position itself, and I think the industry can only do so much. We do need the government to step forward as well. And I thought again it was very interesting to see at MIPIM, that all of the economic regions of the UK, including Belfast, very well represented in terms of a pavilion, and not a sign of Ireland as a country there, or as an economic region. And in fact, it was almost it was I don't know if embarrassing is the right word, but it was very disheartening to meet people in the Belfast tent and pavilion and walk out of it and have them say, "And where's Ireland?" and say Ireland chose not to showcase itself not to look for real estate investment on the international markets. And it was so evident, the absence of Ireland as a country was so evident there. And the industry can do so much, but actually we do need to I think that Ireland has always been good at innovating its way around bad policy, but really we shouldn't have to keep innovating our way around bad policy. We would like for there to be a strong mechanism that is attracting funds over to Ireland so that those and have those funds make a good return and actually be comfortable with the regulatory environment that we have here. So see it as a place that they can fairly succeed and that their business can do well. And maybe that's something we have a bit of work to do in. But I suppose one of the advantages that we do have is that it is a smaller, obviously smaller country, smaller marketplace. So there are opportunities to innovate. So, are you seeing any trends on the ground that, maybe larger operators would struggle, or they'd have a longer lead in time to implement? But are you seeing any trends on the ground in terms of design? Maybe what we thought we wanted 10 years ago isn't necessarily what we want today.
I think that's, the biggest thing at the moment is, I think, a lot of buildings were designed in a certain way for a certain generation. Then COVID happened. I know none of us like to talk about that in the property industry, but it did, I suppose, the one positive that you could really take from that is really made us look at not just the building. There's so much psychology behind it, and I'm hugely interested in it because it's not just the bricks and mortar. I've read lots of things recently, and there's so much, I suppose, data and literature out there, on the flex sector, serviced offices, office design. They all fit in, and it's very much the psychology behind it, workspace design. And how are we designing for the next generation? So yeah, maybe we did amend buildings, and now everybody wants open plan, and they want kind of ancillary places. They want a meeting room within their own demise. They want phone booths. If there's a wellness space, within the complex, or the campus or whatever it is, those are nice to haves. The must haves, I suppose, are well appointed design within a suite. It comes down to even how to bring into the natural elements, like what you said there with the BlackRock case study. How can you retrofit a space, to make the money? It's an investment in your people, but it's also a capital investment in the actual, asset itself. So I suppose in that sense, I suppose the big thing I think that people will capitalize on, and this is going to be, I suppose, the sweet spot for anybody that has, a building, offices, whatever that may be, whoever they are, is looking to design for the future. So I think, coming from a background start, a startup background, sorry, is that you're always looking at companies that are coming up with something new. So it could be, 5 years ago, we would have never have known what AI was, okay, or fintech, or the likes of Revolut. Those ideas would have been so polar opposite to anything we ever knew. And I suppose there is that sort of bias as well, using my psychology speak, in terms of, the fear of the unknown. But right now, we need to be looking at who are the next generation of office workers. You can read all this, the Gen Z. Obviously, we're, most of the people now working in offices are millennials. They work very differently to Gen Z. So millennials, they're at a certain point in their life. They got used to working from home. They like hybrid policies. They don't necessarily need a fixed desk. They're happy to kind of come in 1 or 2 days, work from home, and have that agility. The next generation very much believe in human contact, one-to-one work. So if you're coming in as a grad, they want to sit, with their associate director or whatever. They want that mentorship. They want that in-person experience, but they also want an office that can fit them. So if it's quiet zones, if that you can come in anytime, it's a 24-hour the day. So if it works you better, to if if there's all this data as well on people that say have, learning difficulties, autism, sensory, all of those sort of things. How do you create the sort of environment that cocoons your staff? And once they feel comfortable, they will perform. They will come in, and they'll also have better, inter-staff relationships and things like that, and the collaboration will come there naturally rather than it being forced. So I suppose it's that whole argument of, and there's a lot of this in thought leadership as well, that how do you make the office, worth the commute? And
Yeah,
what is that?
I think that's the crux of it. Can you make the office worth the commute? And I suppose I'm thinking of really early proponents of space as a service, and particularly say Anthony Slumbers in the UK, who's also such a strong AI advocate as well. He always makes the point that companies don't want a nice office; they want a productive workforce. And in order for the workforce to be productive, they have to be happy in their surroundings. They have to, you have to make sure that it's conducive to productivity. So whether it is, and you touched on a really important point there, that actually we're dealing with a diverse workforce. And I think in the past, we're still only in this industry getting to terms with, okay, how are we catering to gender diversity or people from diverse ethnic backgrounds, that actually I don't think we're even close to meeting the needs of people who are neurodiverse in the workforce, and sensory spaces and really catering to the different needs. And it's something that, irrespective of the size of the company, if you have a team of six, you probably have six different people on that team. It's not just a team of 60 or 600 that has to worry about this, and I think maybe as a society, while obviously we move towards the collective in terms of climate action, I think actually we've become much more, it's become a much more personalized society. So actually we want we go into the office, we want to have quite a personal experience. That doesn't mean our own desk or our own office, but it means a space where we can work to whatever our vibe is. So whether it's a little bit of noise, no noise, whether it's a bit of distraction, no distraction, whatever that is, how does one office cater to all these different needs?
I don't think one office can. I think it's, you have a wish list. I'm seeing a lot more as well of my clients that if they're in the smaller teams, and it's funny, especially if they're starting from the ground up and they've gone from, say, one member of staff and they're kind of getting to the six to the tens, it's a huge advancement for them, and they really know that we're building a team and we want these people to stay with us. So it's very much how I would say a holistic approach to the search. I'll meet maybe a CEO today, second viewing, I might meet, their head of environment, which these are great titles. And then you might have somebody like, this is, our youngest member of staff. We want to bring them in. And it's very much, listen, you're never going to find an office that's going to make everybody happy. We know that. But it's more so that you can have people in and you're bringing them into the discussion, and you can kind of say, this is the office we're thinking of. This is, downstairs they have, you bike every day. So, security is going to be really important for you with your bicycle parking. Somebody else could be really into the gym. If there's no on-site gym, you say, listen, there's, a special discount down the road. Somebody else could say, I know you have three kids. You come in later. You might work on American time because we work with American clients. Is it safe for you to be coming in here? How do you get in? All of that. Do you have access to the building to work around your schedule? So, and the other thing is as well, is how do we adopt a space? We could show somebody an office today. It could be, say, a 14 person suite, but they might only be 10. But for them, they'd like to put in soft furnishings, take stuff out, amend it. How can that be done to, I suppose, as well, to reflect their company and their brand going forward? And, for some people, they'll always remember that space maybe as their first office. Other people will say, listen, we're moving from traditional space. This is something new for us. It needs to really perform quite well. So I think, you're never going to find a one size fits all solution, but it's a lot more the, I suppose, active listening to your staff and what they want rather than just saying, this is us, this is where we're going. I think the work life has changed a lot more, and I suppose there's two extremes to everything, and you nearly need to find somewhere in the middle, and that's what we're all basically trying to do to offer. We're not, not everybody can offer a Google, a huge campus, and everything is on site. Not everybody can deliver that, and you also don't want to be, here's a whitewash room with just a table and a chair. It has to be somewhere in the middle. So we're all kind of, I suppose, borrowing from, listening to everything in the market, seeing what's out there, and how can we replicate it on every size and scale of budget?
And I'm so glad that you touched on Maybe the emotion that people will remember this as their first office, because I've been self-employed in this industry for almost quarter of a century. And do you know what? I don't remember all of every house or every place I've ever lived in, but I remember every office. It's a different level of emotion and attachment. And in fact, only the last week we got the keys of a large new building that we're going to be taking on for our Connemara for our Galway operations. And honestly, it feels the same way it does when I got the keys of an office, maybe, I don't know, one tenth that size, probably less, back more than 20 years ago. It is the same feeling, as in, how do I make this that it's the place actually that we're going to work in? And you know, it there's that lovely feeling of hope, but with the balance of trying to serve so many needs within a space. And so I'm actually glad you touched on it, because actually there is an element of emotion there, because obviously there's emotion wrapped up in how and where we work. And I think, oh, that's definitely missing from the office conversation all the time. And yet we spend so much of our time there. We bring our whole selves there, that actually it needs to reflect back. This place needs to reflect back on us. It's how we know that we're working in a place that actually aligns with our values, among a team that are aligned with them, you know, that there is this shared ethos. And the office place is just, it's almost like
It's a
the
third
talisman of
space.
it. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's kind
So,
of, I suppose it's where you do everything. You work, you
yeah.
know, for some people it's where they socialize, other people it's where they forge connections. Other people's where their brand is established. So I suppose
Yes.
it's between the work, between home, how do we create something that fits in? You know, if you need to come in early in the day, you know, that you sit in and you go, this is actually a nice place to be, or that you're proud to bring in other people, you know, that say are external to the business or something like that. So, and that feeds into the amenity rich side of things as well, you know, in the third space. So
Yeah.
definitely that's kind of, I suppose that, you know, designing for the future generations, living into the third space and the psychology behind what does the office actually mean. You know, we read all these articles and, you know, people say the office is dead. We've all seen them. You know, we're not going to sugarcoat it. We've seen those, you know, articles and things like that. But who genuinely is looking? And is it the property, you know, people that work in our industry, or do we give comment on it? Is it designers? Is it, you know, head of environments, whoever? I think we all need to feed into that. And somewhere in all of that, when you lay it all on the table, that's where the golden nuggets are going to come of how do we find, you know, how are we designing for the future?
You know, I love that. It is about how we're designing for the future, but you're right, it needs that multidisciplinary approach. And I think that's a really, it's a good note to finish on, because actually it's bringing together all of the people who are not just kind of contributing to the built environment, but are then going to use it. So thank you so much for being so generous with your time and insights. I always enjoy chatting to you. I think you definitely have got your finger on the pulse in terms of the needs of I think every couple of years we're seeing some trends come in, and there are new occupiers coming in, and what the questions they ask you, I find interesting, because that to me is what's shaping the future trends that we're going to see. So look, I always learn so much, and I'm always interested to hear about that. So thank you so much. That was Alicia Green, Flex Space Consultant with Knight Frank. My thanks as always to producer Katie Tallon and to our production team at Hear Me Roar Media. Also, a huge thanks to our show sponsor, daft.ie, Ireland's most visited property website. And finally, thank you indeed for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Property Roundup. In the meantime, please be sure to check out all of the other Irish and international real estate and construction shows here on iPropertyRadio.com.